There are very few things that investors can do that are free. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, saving strategies, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to Free Lunch, hosted by the CM Group. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty to help clients achieve their vision through a deep understanding of what's important to them that requires planning, money, and time. Learn more and subscribe today at markets-work.com.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, it is for sure springtime now.
That's right.
Have you noticed a change on your lawn or?
It's spring again.
Spring again.
We had spring a couple of weeks ago. The snow was completely gone from our lawn.
Yeah.
Then it snowed. Now the snow is gone again from our yard.
So spring has sprung.
Yeah.
Which means probably only 2 to 3 more snow dumps in Calgary.
That's right. Something to look forward to.
But another sure sign of spring for me is some certain events that have happened and are happening. So the Masters just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. And before that, we had the NCAA Final Four tournament.
Right.
Did you watch any of those?
I did not.
Yeah. Well, I know that it's not in your area of interest.
I think I was busy when all that was happening.
You were busy for all those days?
I had to go to the dry cleaners or something.
Well, I'm sure that you heard about one of the players in the Final Four on the women's side.
I certainly did.
Yeah, it's Caitlin Clark, who has been described as a generational talent. And she certainly brought a lot of people, viewers,
yep,
to women's Final Four basketball.
What was it, 18 million or something?
It's about the same number of people that listen to our podcast.
About 18 million.
Just then. Under 18 million.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So Caitlin Clark, for those that don't know, that have been living under a rock, I mean, plays for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and she is projected to be the number one pick in the upcoming WNBA draft. She is the all-time leading scorer in women's NCAA history, and she holds a ton of records. So I'm not going to get into all the records because that might be a whole podcast on its own.
Even I am aware of some of her successes.
Some of her accolades?
Like, absolutely.
So her team that she plays on, the Iowa Hawkeyes, they made it to the championship game, which is a pretty remarkable feat in itself. What's even more remarkable is it's the second year in a row that they've been in the championship game. Now, spoiler alert, it's not much of a spoiler because this happened weeks ago.
Yep.
But again, if you weren't paying attention, they lost.
Huh.
So the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history leads her team to back-to-back championship games and loses both of them.
Yeah.
So I guess the question for me is, how did this come to be that this all-time leading scorer was on the losing side of the outcome?
Good question.
So let me keep going with this. She scored 18 points in the first quarter of the championship game, which is another record for Caitlin Clark. Nobody's ever done that before in women's NCAA Final Four history. She ended the game with 30 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists. Now, Greg, as you know, I am not a basketball person.
I think more of a football person, but
more of football, hockey, kind of my jam. I respect people that play basketball. I just don't really follow it. But those numbers, even as a non-basketball person, seem pretty good. So I guess the question, again, is why didn't they win the game? So the game leading up to the championship game, Caitlin Clark scored 41 points in a rematch against LSU, which was the rematch from last year's championship game.
Right.
That's a lot of points, right?
It is, 41.
Yeah. Yeah, so all eyes were on Caitlin and her Hawkeyes, and a lot of people just assumed that they were going to win the championship. So, again, the question I have is, what was the problem? Thinking about this, Greg, what do you think the problem was, if you had to guess?
I don't know. I guess the other team scored more points.
Exactly. The other team scored more points. So the problem was not necessarily Caitlin Clark. It may have been, what did the rest of the Iowa Hawkeyes team contribute? So the team they played against was South Carolina. And I don't know if it was South Carolina State or University of South Carolina. So forgive me for being a non-basketball person trying to discuss this. But every single player on the South Carolina team, the starters and all of the players on the bench, scored at least 2 points.
Right.
All of them. Do you know how many points the players on the bench for Iowa scored, Greg?
Tell me.
0.
Okay, that's a difference.
Yeah, so not a single point was scored by any player that came off the bench, And some of those players played for as much as 13 minutes of the game. So the whole game is only 40 minutes,
yeah,
right? So some players played almost a third of the game and scored 0 points.
Gotcha.
Whereas the South Carolina team, everybody's contributed. So in essence, why are we talking about this? Well, to me, the outcome of this game is totally relatable to investing.
Yep.
And we would call this in our world concentration risk and perhaps lack of diversification.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of the same thing, right?
Absolutely.
Another term for it, which I like, is idiosyncratic risk. So idiosyncratic risk is another term we use to describe something called non-systematic risk.
Yep.
Which, when you use those words, I think you're just using them to try to sound smart.
Exactly.
But all it really means is that there's a difference between systematic risk and non-systematic risk. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is we're going to talk about idiosyncratic risk, systematic risk,
yep,
concentration, and diversification.
It's interesting. I mean, that's actually quite an appropriate analogy, because whether you're talking about a sports team, which they call it team for a reason, I guess.
No, I in team.
It's a group of players.
Yep.
The expectation is that every player will contribute. Okay, so obviously you're going to have some star players and players that are just so much different or better than the average. But you expect the average player to contribute.
Yeah.
And whether it's 2 points a game, like South Carolina bench scored or what have you. And so totally relevant to when we build portfolios and how we build portfolios and why we do what we do. So you mentioned idiosyncratic risk, which is something that's called non-systematic risk. So let's, mm-hmm, I guess, to make it make sense, what is systematic risk? And systematic risk is just the risk inherent to being in the entire market or market segment. So systematic risk goes by various names. Sometimes if you call it market risk, people might even understand that a little bit better, just the risk of being in the market.
So just the risk of being invested.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's known as undiversifiable risk or volatility risk, or as I say, market risk, because if you're in the market and the market experiences volatility, you're going to experience some volatility.
Yeah.
And that's just the risk of being there. And so it's why it's called market risk or systematic risk, the risk of the system. And it's important because you look at some of the different asset classes. I mean, stock market has more implied risk than the bond market. Mm-hmm. When you look at the historic volatility of the stock market, it's typically more volatile than the bond market. And which is one of the reasons why you expect to receive higher rates of return when you take on stock market risk compared to taking on bond market risk.
Some of the conversations we had in 2022, remember that year, mm-hmm, which led into the first 10 months of 2023.
Yeah.
2023, we just call November and December now.
That's right.
We don't call it 2023.
Exactly.
Some conversations we had back then, people would call in and say, you know, I know the market's down. I understand why, inflation, interest rates, all that stuff. But why is my portfolio down? And so this is just what you're talking about, is
exactly
that your portfolio was down because the market was down and you're invested in the market.
That's right. And of course, most people's portfolios is not just stock market concentrated. Most people, mm-hmm, have some stocks, some bonds, some cash. And so their actually return is going to tie very closely to the actual systematic risk or market risk for each of those asset classes.
Yeah.
And it just so happened in 2022, which you brought up, the bond market experienced some of its worst returns ever. Mm-hmm. And that's bond market risk, and it's not expected, but it happened. And if you owned any bonds, regardless of whether they were government, corporate, short-term, long-term, you were affected.
Yeah.
And that's market risk.
Yeah.
So the other side then is what we talked about with regards to lack of diversification, which is called idiosyncratic risk. And maybe another word that people might understand a little better is unsystematic risk. We talk about market risk as being systematic risk. Idiosyncratic risk is non-systematic risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that really talks about the risks of being in either a particular group of securities, like a particular sector, or being in an individual security. And unsystematic risk, you can actually improve, and you improve it through diversification. So with systematic risk, it's just the probability of loss that's associated with being in the entire market. Unsystematic risk refers to the probability of loss within a specific industry or security. And again, you can diversify that away just through including more holdings, mm-hmm, more types of investments.
Yeah.
in your basketball example, the expected return for Caitlin Clark was higher than any other individual player on either team.
And she did score more points than any other player on either team.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the outcome of the game was sort of dependent on all of the players, as it turned out, and not just a single player. And so Iowa basically experienced idiosyncratic or non-systematic risk.
Maybe they should be called the Iowa Idiosyncratic Risk instead of the Iowa Hawkeyes.
That's catchy.
I'm going to suggest that to their alumni.
Exactly.
I don't think it'll catch on.
No,
so maybe what about, not. Okay, so we've gone through systematic risk, non-systematic risk, and that leads right into, as you mentioned, how to get rid of the non-systematic risk is diversification.
Right on.
So diversification is simply a risk management strategy that creates a mix of various investments within a portfolio. So a diversified portfolio contains a mix of different asset classes and different investment vehicles, basically in an attempt to limit the exposure to any single asset or risk. So it's pretty simple to understand in our example. I mean, if all of the expected return came from one player on one team and they did not score enough baskets on their own,
right,
then the other team that had a more diversified distribution of production,
yes,
just did better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the rationale behind the technique of diversification is that a portfolio constructed of different kinds of assets will, on average, yield higher long-term returns and lower the risk of any individual holding or security. So, you know, there's all kinds of examples of this in the marketplace, right?
Yeah.
If you load it up on one stock, you might do really well. But what if that stock doesn't do well? Then you might do really poorly, right?
Yep.
So it's true that you could have a better outcome by focusing on that one star player or that one star company, but you could greatly reduce the overall risk by just having multiple players or multiple stocks and bonds that are contributing to the actual overall outcome.
Exactly.
So basically, in a nutshell, that's the saying you always say, right? In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
To sum up.
To summarize this point, diversification just simply smooths out unsystematic risk events in a portfolio. So the positive performance of some investments neutralizes the negative performance of others. And the benefits of diversification hold only if the securities in the portfolio are not perfectly correlated.
Right.
Right. So that is, they respond differently in different speeds, moving in different directions to market influences.
Exactly. So let's just talk for a second about like the different types of asset classes that we try to include in portfolios to make sure that they're well diversified. When fund managers and investors, whoever is directing those particular investments, will look at the different asset classes and try to determine what percentages of the portfolio to allocate to each. And that will depend entirely on the individual investor's risk capacity and risk tolerance, you know. So,
yeah.
But the different asset classes typically include the ones that we know about, stocks, basically, which are, everyone knows, shares or equity in a publicly traded company. Bonds, which can be issued by governments, corporations, both local and around the world. You can invest in a publicly traded real estate investment, which includes land, buildings, maybe natural resources, could even include agriculture, water and mineral deposits, things like that.
Before you go on, a question somebody might have is, well, how do you invest in publicly traded real estate? And that would be through like a REIT.
That's essentially, right. Yeah, right? A real estate fund of some kind, a mutual fund or a exchange-traded fund. Exchange-traded funds basically are just marketable baskets of securities that follow an index or a commodity or even a sector. Speaking of commodities, you can invest in commodities through funds and ETFs, which are basically just the basic goods necessary for production of other products or services. So anything from oil and gas to
gold, pork bellies,
orange juice.
Can you invest in, is there a pork belly ETF?
I don't think there's a specific one, but you might have one that would include pork bellies. And cash, of course, is another asset class, short-term cash equivalents, which includes things like treasury bills, GICs, money market funds, and other sort of short-term, low-risk investments. And the theory holds that what might negatively impact one asset class could benefit another. And this is what you were talking about when asset classes are either positively or negatively correlated, it means those asset classes don't behave in the same way. So for example, when interest rates rise, as we experienced in 2022, that can often negatively impact bond prices because the yields have to increase to make fixed income securities more attractive. But they also, rising interest rates may result in increases in rent for real estate or increases in prices for commodities or higher borrowing costs for real estate companies and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
Craig, we have to cut away to get a word from our sponsor.
Right.
This will just take a second. Let's go to the sponsor now. Investments keeping you up at night? Worried about the stock market? Worried about the bond market? Unsure what to do? Well, you might want to check out www.markets-work.com and contact the CM Group. Okay, we're back.
We're back, right. Okay, so listen, what you talked about with Caitlin Clark and her team really talks to concentration risk. Now, there are benefits in a concentrated investment portfolio. And one of the benefits is that while it does increase risk, it also increases potential gains.
Yeah.
So investment portfolios that obtain the highest returns for investors are often, but not usually, widely diversified. So if somebody happens to make an investment concentrated in a few companies or industries, let's say you picked technology at the right time, maybe in early 2020,
yeah,
things like that, you could end up with a very successful investment portfolio, provided you decide to also sell at the right time.
Yeah, and we often call this the get rich versus lose everything portfolio.
Exactly.
So if you have a concentrated position or a concentrated portfolio, let's say it's five stocks for whatever reason, and you pick the best five stocks, you can absolutely get rich.
For sure.
But if one or more of those stocks fails, you could absolutely lose everything.
That's right. And so when you think about get rich, lose everything, I mean, those are just two extreme possible outcomes whenever you buy an individual stock or focus all of your investments in a sector. And what diversification does is it just limits the outcomes, so the potential outcomes. So you're not going to get rich with a well-diversified portfolio, but you should have a very positive investment return that hopefully will get you to your financial goals. And when the markets do experience negative returns or bear markets, as we've experienced at various times, the pandemic, the global financial crisis, for example.
I thought we weren't talking about the global financial crisis anymore.
We'll just mention it because it did happen, I guess, and many of us still remember it as if it was yesterday.
Many of us are still in therapy about that one.
Exactly. But when you do experience those kind of downturns, you don't lose everything. I mean, even during the global financial crisis, when stocks were down 50%, bonds actually had a pretty good year in 2009 and offset some of those losses. So that's concentration risk.
Yeah. So in our basketball example, the Iowa Hawkeyes focused on concentration risk by trying to get the best results from one player.
Yep.
And we can see how this worked out for them in the long run. They lost the game. That player just didn't produce as many points as the rest of the other team. So the more diversified South Carolina team produced more points as a team and they won the game.
Yep, right on.
So how do we implement this in investment management? Because we're not basketball coaches or basketball scouts, but we do work with people on their investments, is we help people set SMART goals. And you've heard this acronym, you've used this acronym before. These are specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. Because it's one thing to say, well, I want to, I don't know, triple my money. But it's like, well, how, right?
Yes.
So the first thing we have to do is look at your asset allocation. And we spend a lot of time on asset allocation because it's actually the most important decision that you need to make at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
You need to decide after you've done your financial planning and set your actual goals, like what do you want to achieve in that planning process? You're going to go through identifying, I don't know, if it's buying something, saving something, retirement, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to set some specific goals and your asset allocation is going to be dictated by how much risk you have to take to achieve those goals.
Yep.
So that's a specific goal, right? Setting a specific goal during the planning process. You then have to look at what you mentioned and what I mentioned, the diversification in your portfolio. So as much as we want to find the next Caitlin Clark in the investment world, the reality is that this is a pretty hard thing to do. It's kind of like buying Apple now.
Yeah.
Apple's a good company.
Sure.
But you probably would have been better off buying Apple 20 years ago before it exploded into what it is today.
Exactly.
Right? So you don't know what will be the next Apple is the problem. Like Apple at the time, 20 years ago, people might not have been interested in.
That's right. Yeah.
So you've got to spread your risk and buy a really diversified pool of stocks and bonds, and you have to measure your results back to your original plan. So that's really important. So specific and measurable. Next, you'll want to ignore all the noise out there. So those headlines, conversations that show examples of how things worked out really well for a small group of investors at different times.
Yep.
I mean, you have to make it realistic. Is it realistic to expect a rate of return of 20% per year? Do you think it's realistic?
I don't think it's realistic, no.
Yeah, it's a loaded question. Kind of threw you a softball. But in your well-diversified portfolio of, let's say it's 60% equities, 40% bonds, just because that's a typical type of asset allocation,
yeah,
it's not realistic to expect 20% per year every year.
No.
So make it realistic by looking back at the planning that was done at the beginning and set more realistic expected return rate goals that are linked back to the goals of what you're trying to achieve, right?
Yep.
And lastly, on this long rant, your results are going to be driven by time. So they must be timely,
yep,
right? So it would be unreasonable, as I mentioned earlier, to expect to double or triple your money in 1 year with those same parameters we set above. But it is realistic to plan to double or even triple your money over long, long periods of time. There's just the simple effects of compounding, staying invested during all market cycles. If you stay invested, even the last person to invest in 2007, before the credit market collapsed,
yes,
as long as they stayed invested, they made all of their money back by 2011,
yep,
and were way ahead by 2013.
We see this all the time when we do reviews with clients and we look at portfolios where it was just basically left alone, untouched, yeah, for years. And it's remarkable what kind of returns can be achieved just by leaving things alone.
Yeah.
Rebalancing. Obviously.
Yeah.
You know, take advantage of times when stocks go down, you want to rebalance so that you're adding more stocks at lower prices. But beyond that, there's not really much fiddling you need to do.
Yeah, this whole notion of keeping a pulse on the market, or what are some of the other terms that you hear, like
being nimble?
Yeah, agile.
Yep.
You got to be agile. You got to pivot.
Yep.
I mean, that's all bunk. I mean, those are terms you hear from people that are trying to make their mark by actively trading securities, when,
yep,
I actually feel like at their core, those same people know, or I hope they know and understand that, you know, as long as you stay invested in a well-diversified portfolio, you're going to be fine.
Exactly.
Because even some of the most active, or what they claim to be active, money managers typically are closet indexers. So they'll have 90% of the market as their core, and mm-hmm, then they take 10% and they overweight to a couple of securities and hope, yes, that it works out.
No, exactly.
By the way, I like to pick on her just because you brought it up. In 2020, there was a Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation,
right,
ETF.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it knocked it out of the park because it was a ETF loaded up on tech companies,
yep,
during a period of time when the world shut down and everybody was working from home.
Yes, exactly.
How has that fared to date?
Well, interesting. Of course, it got in 2022, it completely tanked, and anybody who bought at the top lost most of their money. And like anything, if you actually bought in at the very bottom in 2022, you might actually be looking okay right now. You'd,
yep,
still be way underwater from the peaks set back in the heydays of the pandemic. So that really highlights the whole point of the risk involved in those kinds of concentrated bets. Yeah, you can do great for a while, then you might do terribly for a long time, then you do maybe great again. And the only way to be certain is to know exactly when the right time to buy and sell is, which nobody does.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the progress of a fund like that, a technology-focused fund, let's say, over a well-diversified index fund, you'll see lots of ups and downs, lots of volatility, and just the nice, smooth, hopefully, progression of a more broadly diversified portfolio. And you may end up in the same place or even way better off,
yeah,
just by not playing in the game.
Yeah, and again, I don't mean to pick on this person, but it's easy because that same person came out a year or two ago and said that they expect to get 50% rates of return for the next foreseeable future.
Sure.
Now that's not a specific, well, it is specific.
Yeah.
It is measurable.
Right.
It's not probably attainable or realistic.
That's right.
especially not in a timely fashion to which they predicted.
Exactly.
Because they haven't achieved it.
Right? Well, and again, so much of that is based on if this happens and that happens, and if I'm right about this, and it requires so much prediction of the future that nobody could reasonably be expected to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, listen, to wrap this up, I will just say this is not the last we're going to hear about this Caitlin Clark for those basketball fans out there.
Right.
We're all on board with watching her potentially change or at least positively impact women's sports going forward. But when it comes to investing, we want to remove that concentration risk. We want to follow the principles that have worked over time and that will continue to work. And we're going to spend more time in future episodes going through those principles.
Well said.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And it was nice to have a sponsor again for this episode.
It was.
That's a good group, the CM Group.
Thanks to our sponsors, for sure.
All right. Till next time.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by the CM Group. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to markets-work.com. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast. CIBC logo and CIBC Private Wealth are registered trademarks of CIBC. If you're currently a CIBC Wood Gundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Private Wealth consists of services provided by CIBC and its subsidiaries, including CIBC Wood Gundy, a division of CIBC World Markets Inc. CIBC Private Wealth is a registered trademark of CIBC used under license. Wood Gundy is a registered trademark of CIBC World Markets Inc. Colin Andrews and Greg Kreminski are investment advisors with CIBC Wood Gundy. This information, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. CIBC and CIBC World Markets Inc., their affiliates, directors, officers, and employees may buy, sell, or hold a position and securities of the companies mentioned here and its affiliates or subsidiaries, and they also perform financial advisory services, investment banking, or other services for or have lending or other credit relationships with the same. CIBC World Markets Inc. and its representatives will receive sales commissions and or a spread between bid and ask prices if you purchase, sell, or hold the securities referred to above. CIBC World Markets Inc. 2024.